inclined to sort of have a moment's silence, like a minute silence for the passing of pessimistic yeah. Gaz.
He'll be back.
Yeah,
he'll be back. Pessimistic Gaz is only ever one injury crisis away from return.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got everybody in. We've got the and a better Wi-Fi than we've ever had before. So we're not going to lose Leon out in Austria. Usual folks. It's me, Russell,
Daniel,
Gareth.
Oh well,
Rich.
It was a pretty special evening, and I don't remember a game that had such a build-up beforehand and that kind of met those expectations, and, well, not necessarily expectations, but certainly those hopes and aspirations. I mean, we've had build-up and then crushing disappointment and deflation afterwards, and was just walking on air for days afterwards.
Just...
Were you all actually there? Is it just me who wasn't there then?
I wasn't there, I watched it in the pub. So I was in Cardiff, I was out before the game, but I didn't have a ticket, so I thought I'd watch it in the Westgate.
Yeah, I think the rest of us were all there, weren't we?
Yeah.
It's yeah. Pretty special.
Yeah, and the, although I think only one of us is a Canton ender.
It was
at
a
the moment.
Yeah. We had a quiet evening in the Canton.
Yeah. yeah. There was an interesting thing on a message board, just digressing slightly, that was sort of saying, well done to the Barry Horns, you know, really great, contributed to the evening, set a tempo and all the rest of it. And I don't think I heard them once. And I'm on, where are we, more or less halfway, aren't we?
Halfway,
in the Ninian.
Yeah.
And I couldn't hear them. And that's not a criticism of them. That is just testament to how noisy the rest of the
Well, I think they've actually
the stadium was.
They've actually spoken about that. They've said, for them, that's brilliant, because they just want to kind of fill in the gaps, which is kind of what, I mean, I could hear them being literally on the right on the back row of the Canton. But yeah, for them, it's just about kind of, They prompted some songs, but were very quickly drowned out on most occasions, which is really good.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think... Could you hear them?
No, I couldn't hear them. I don't think I've experienced an atmosphere like that for Wales.
Well, I know a few football, Cardiff City fans who said they've not heard that atmosphere in that stadium.
Mm. Yeah.
And Cardiff City got promotion in that stadium and, and beat Man City. And, there's been some decent results in that stadium. And I thought the Scotland game eventually got going. Admittedly, the Scots contributed a lot of that noise, but that was another step up.
Long may it continue, really, isn't it?
And pretty much nails for me any talk of. I know there's other stuff today, maybe like a glamour friendly in November or something. But for me, any notion that we take competitive games anywhere else, I think, is just ridiculous. Mm. Not that I was inclined to anyway, but I think that just confirms it. As your blog then so articulately and eloquently and persuasively made the point as well there, Rich.
Well, I thought there's no point being neutral on something you feel really strongly about. But yeah, I kind of feel like the biggest thing is the players, and we're talking about Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, simply do not want to play it away from the Cardiff Stadium, and that means it won't happen,
right.
I think. Gareth Bale, rightfully, is in some ways kind of bigger than, I guess, the financial imperative in some way, because he will generate more income in the long run. So you need to keep him happy. He wouldn't, I don't think, threaten to not play or anything, but I mean, I think his viewpoint is held as the kind of the go-to.
I think that it's a happy medium, isn't it? I would rather stay at Cardiff City Stadium, but to do that, you have to play one game a season in the millennium, I'm happy to do that.
I think one game a season, it's just kind of, I was wondering, how do you pick that game? Because I think we've kind of covered this a little before. If we're going to be playing Argentina, I think we need to be trying to beat Argentina. And the best way of doing that is in the Cardiff City Stadium. But if we play like a mediocre team in the Millennium Stadium, it simply won't sell out.
No.
Which really devalues the whole momentum we're building.
I wonder if this thing, it could take on a life of its own. It's all very well as having that principle now. We'll have one big friendly there. If that big friendly sells out, and the atmosphere is pretty good, say, then it stops being so easy to say, oh, but look how well we're doing at the Cardiff City Stadium, and the talk of moving will kind of rear its head again. So there's risks even with the friendlies
for me personally, I would say
staying there.
I would say no games. But there's kind of ways around that. Really sort of simple things like just putting the price of the tournament ticket up a little bit.
Yeah.
Not to make it prohibitive, but just a little bit. A Wales team that qualifies unbeaten and does extremely well in the Euros will sell an unheard of amount of shirts,
Yeah,
branded football, and that's, I think, long term how you get the how you generate money and stuff.
On a side note, because I didn't go to the game, I was mingling around town and talking to some Belgian fans, and they were on their way to the game, and they were all kind of disappointed the game wasn't being played at the Millennium Stadium. And I remember thinking, actually, this will work in our favour here, because I said that it was, in fact, there was two guys, Martin and Glenn, and they were from Genk.
Glenn.
Or as they pronounce it, Glenn, and he's from Genk. Basically saying, oh, we were hoping the game would be in the Millennium Stadium. And I said, I can imagine you were, actually, because that would help you. Bigger ground, less of an atmos, a bigger arena that they're used to playing at, their players, for us. And we said right at the beginning of these podcasts of this tournament that the right capacity ground was going to be crucial for us to create that extra man, that intimidating club atmosphere, which I recall games at the Vetch Field and at Ninian Park. And we sort of lost that for years at the Millennium. So I remember thinking, yeah, if they picked, the fact that they wanted to go there and the fact we hadn't gone there was always going to suit us in the end.
And how many times have we seen it over the years, sort of great pockets of noisy pockets of away support, and Belgium in there on last week, all in their red, great fans.
Yeah,
you know, but there's no way they were going to sort of out noise, out sing.
They said
the Cardiff City Stadium that night,
because they played France 4 or 5 days before. They reckon that they'd taken about 8,000 away fans to that France game. And once again, because I was in Burger King chatting to these guys, I said, well, that's yet another reason why we haven't done it. 30,000 or 33,000, only 2,000 Belgian fans, 31,000 Wales fans. That's a home game, thank you very much. That's exactly what it should be, in your favour.
And they really were silenced as well.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
So, I mean, Belgium had kind of a huge, huge part of the game, but even when they were kind of in control, because of the noise we were generating, you'd look across to the Belgian fans and they weren't really doing anything. It kind of seemed quite static in their seats.
There were 5,000 people travelled over. There was 3,000 Belgians in Cardiff City Centre.
Wow. There was a lot.
There was more came over without tickets than with. Once again, they weren't particularly happy with that. And I was like, come on, boys, it's our home game. It's not meant to be provided for you.
Yeah.
You know, although at that point I will admit, I was saying to them, if we get a draw, I'm happy with that. And they said to me, they said, oh, back in Belgium, they said, quietly, we're confident because we've only lost one game in like 2 years. And they said, back in Belgium, they said, we're worried about this game. They said, we're really worried about it.
Well, that's interesting, because when I spoke to John Chapman, he said he felt that much of the media and the fans expected to win and to win big. And that surprised me, because I thought, well, they've not rolled us over in the three previous games.
No.
We've drawn the two previous games. But, I mean, they started, for the first 15, 20 minutes, and they had it all, didn't they?
They had it all.
And I was a bit anxious, and I think Hennessy got down, didn't he? Saved.
There was one excellent save.
Three minutes in, that was, from
Nangoran, and there was that volley from Hazard. But I thought, as soon as we scored, Hazard in particular pretty much disappeared.
First 20 minutes of the second half, we were under a lot of pressure again.
Yeah.
They came, you could tell, they got a rollicking, and they came out and they thought, right, we need to do this all over again. But it didn't happen for them.
The midfield was really fluid. It was interesting, because John had made the point that Nangalan was allowing Witzel to push forward. And I was thinking, we've spoken about it before, he can kind of suffocate your team, and he can kind of get in their faces, and he's got a high work rate. And I thought, well, if he's further up, is he cutting us off at source almost? Is he on top of Allen and Ledley, but Allen in particular? And the number of times he let players just go past him.
Mm. And he
was supposed to be the, or had been until this point. I mean, Nangalan looks to be the sort of heir apparent, but to this point, you know, he's been their anchor man, their holder midfielder. And I just thought he was really poorly disciplined in just letting players track past him. Not just Ramsey or Bale, Ledley got ahead of him on a couple of occasions as well. And I just thought, well, this balance isn't there. You look at them, and they had a lot of the ball. They were going back and forth, left to right. But you could see he took Mertens off, because I think he thought the balance isn't right, although he had to accommodate another striker. But they never really threatened.
Yeah.
And I think that's
their final
kind
ball
of what we said a few times in the other games.
Wasn't impressive, was it? They were good almost until they got to our box. But our defence was so sound in the end. They're just shooting from distance. From quite early on, they were taking shots from distance. I thought, well, this helps us, this does.
Well, actually, Williams spoke quite a lot about that after the game. He was saying they always felt confident in their organisation that they could keep another team from scoring, Belgium in this case. and they said they knew if they were to score a goal and go up, they'd be fine. They were confident of keeping any team from scoring. And I think although Belgium did have a lot of the ball, they weren't particularly, I guess, creative. We didn't look stretched even when they had more of the ball. There was like a couple of very kind of mildly threatening moments, but they didn't do anything kind of incisive with it. I think
second half was as the second half went on, I thought we looked more comfortable.
Yeah,
you know, they had a couple of chances at the start of the second half, didn't they? And all right, at the end they put us under a bit of pressure, but I would never say it was. I thought we were comfortable for large periods of that second half. We controlled it really, really well, and they didn't really look to be able to break us down at all. You know, we were so organised in defence.
It was a proper defensive performance, wasn't it? How many times have we seen that kind of desperate performance against a superior team? And if we break up an attack, we lose the ball again on halfway, and it just comes back, and it comes back, and it comes back. And if we ever get a result, it's because of heroics by a goalkeeper and a bit of luck and whatever else. So it wasn't like that. Having said that, the game changed in each half as it went on. The way it was at the start of the first half, and certainly the first 20 minutes or so of the second half, if it had carried on like that, they would have scored sooner or later, because we weren't getting a foot on the ball, we weren't getting possession. But as the half went on, certainly once Joe Allen, funnily enough, after he got booked, started getting his foot on the ball and moving the ball, and we were maintaining a bit of possession as we went forward, then it kind of broke up their attacks, and they didn't sort of come back and back and back repeatedly in the same way. And we looked dangerous then. We had chances. Ramsey, for all, again, he wasn't perhaps at his best. It's so important now to have those players where we can move the ball forward quickly when we break up their attack. Bale was doing it, Allen was doing it, and Ramsey was getting on the ball in their half. Kanu even getting wide, and the fullbacks as well, to be able to sort of get four or five players forward pretty quickly, so that we have, even if it's 1 or 2 minutes at a time of attack and possession, in between their domination of football is really, really important. And as the halves went on, and they ran out of ideas, there was more and more of us doing that.
Joe Allen really grew into it, I thought. Yeah. He was very, very quiet. In fact, you didn't really see him at all. It sort of passed him by, didn't it, those 20 minutes. But I think once Bale scored and we came into the game, you could see him growing in confidence, and he was sort of dictating it, wasn't he? Particularly that first half, from about sort of 25 minutes to 45 through to half time, that he was great.
Yeah.
And that shows his value, I think, when you can get him on the ball.
How did it look from your Irish bar in Innsbruck early on?
Oh, it was great. I leapt up when we scored, and yeah, I shocked a few people. But just before the game, I was really sort of confident in the build up to it. I had a similar feeling with this game that I had before the Germany game in '91 when we won, and the Italy game in 2002. Which, when you look at it sort of on paper, it doesn't really sort of make much sense to be confident about our defence made up of players from like Swansea, Hull, and Reading up against like the PFA Player of the Year, who plays for Chelsea, the Bundesliga Player of the Year, who plays for Wolfsburg. You know, their front six plays for Napoli, Zenit St. Petersburg, Roma. And it's just weird how like confident I was that we were gonna shut them out, really. And as soon as we scored, I thought, yeah, we're probably gonna win this now. You know, maybe we'll nick another one, but it was great. Absolutely loved it. It was just like watching Chelsea get through a Champions League semi-final against Barcelona or something. And I never thought I'd say that about like watching Wales, you know, that we kind of defended like Chelsea would in a Champions League semi-final.
It was efficient, wasn't it?
They
got it done. They knew what they had to do. They stuck to it and they did it.
That's a really good comparison. You could see it. I mean, see it early on. It was a massive call to put Jazz Richards in. And in the first couple of minutes, as Hazard picks up the ball on the left, Richard sort of shows him inside and then sort of ushers him back up the line a little bit. All right, gives away a foul. But he couldn't come inside because, as was going on right through the game, we were sort of doubling up. So Gunter or Allen had come across if he does go inside. And we gave away a free kick, but straight away you could see, all right, he's gonna do a job on Hazard. He's not going to be pushed around. He's not going to let him gonna go to the line. And the rare occasions they did get across from close to the goal line in was for Tongan overlapping, but never really came, and once or twice, and never really came to anything. And they resorted to sort of deep Mertens, putting a couple of deep crosses, didn't he? Which didn't very little. So their delivery was really poor, but I think that was a lot down to the shape and the way we set up.
What was everyone's view of James Chester?
Oh, he's huge. I think we've been so fortunate that he's kind of got this. It was immediate as well with Ashley Williams. They're a genuine partnership, I feel, and they kind of complement each other. And particularly because neither of them are huge kind of sort of units at the back there. They're really, really competent in the air. I mean, luckily for us, I guess, Fellaini and Kompany weren't playing. But even saying that, they've been fantastic together. Was it have we conceded from open play?
No,
we haven't, yeah. So I think, yeah, they are the foundation for the reason why we're top and unbeaten.
And I think Fellaini was a big loss for them. I think they put in so many crosses against us. Partly I think because we were inviting them to. I think we did go a little bit narrow, even though it was five at the back. We were compact and quite narrow on occasions. I think we just backed ourselves after a while. Certainly midway through the second half, I thought well, we've seen everything out so far. Let's back ourselves to keep doing that. And they were inviting the crosses. Mm-hmm. And I suppose statistically, you look at sort of the sort of modern. And the analysis of football and the statistics of it, there's probably fewer goals conceded from crosses than there are from balls coming mm-hmm. between your defenders and over and that sort of thing. And I just think they sort of they backed themselves. But I thought we'd miss Collins, but until when we heard Fellaini was out, and it was what, maybe 2 days before.
Yeah, two.
The start of the week he was still available and we'd expect him to play, and he'd had a brilliant game against France, ball accounts. But I thought we'd miss Collins, and I think in the end we didn't. And I'm beginning to revise my opinion as to whether we will ever miss him aerially speaking, because I thought Williams and Chester were both brilliant. And Chester, we said before, I mean, in the doubleheader Bosnia Cyprus, he was terrific in the air, barely missed a header in the two games. And I don't necessarily think that losing Collins again is a huge issue. And I think even we lost Ben Davis, who again is not short. You look like we can face a team that might be a little bit more direct, be a bit more aerial, and look like we can deal with it.
It's interesting what happens with Chester, because I'm sure he'll be linked with a move back to the EPL, I think.
He should be as well.
Yeah, and I guess for him it would be about finding the right club. But I guess as long as he's playing, I think. I mean, even if he was playing in the Championship, it wouldn't be ideal. But I think he's shown he is right for our level, so
Gunch has been playing in the Championship. He had a superb game as well. I mean, because I wasn't watching it, I'm watching it on TV. You may get a slightly different perspective of it, and there was a lot of close-up shots of Gunter that they do on the TV when he's the guy who gets his foot on it or gets his head on it, and there was a lot of close-up shots of him just basically just putting in a shift. And he was actually my player of the game, because I was watching it on TV, the amount of times you thought, oh, it's Gunter again, it's Gunter again, he's getting stuck in. Even if he wasn't getting the ball, it was him sort of hustling Belgium's forward so that these crosses were coming in and just bouncing through the area and just going off for a goal kick quite harmlessly. And he played, as did Richards actually, they all played well in defence. But I thought Gunter had a superb game, and he's playing Championship football, so.
It seems a bit silly sort of kind of singling anybody out for man of the match or player of the game, as it were. But I thought Taylor personally, and I think it's testament to everyone has gone for, like, I've seen this on the message board and on social media as well, people are calling out different players, and I think I've pretty much seen everybody get a shout out in
five,
that regard,
like a few of them.
Back five.
Yeah,
I can pick one of them, and Jazz Richards, just got to say as well, I think he wasn't set to play because Dummett was, and then he pulled up injured a few days before. And so he just came in quite last minute, actually.
Is he still going to
put in that kind of performance, up against Hazard, considering he's not as experienced as the rest of the back five. I thought he was just amazing, really, Richards.
Yeah, he was excellent. I mean, you said you asked if he's going to Fulham.
Yeah, because there's some doubt now on that.
If he had any sense, he didn't sign before the game and just kept the options open, because you can imagine a few other sides thinking, hang on a minute.
I don't think it's been agreed, because I've seen it's been linked with other people as well.
He was a great attacking threat as well. As we started to relieve the pressure, as both halves went on, him getting forward was crucial. And there was a lovely bit in the second half where one of their attacks breaks up and it kind of falls quite nicely into his path. But he sort of he just sort of rolls the ball and just put back to Adam and just bombs on. And again, we got three or four players moving quickly forward again. And that was a big part of it, wasn't it? He was really solid, but he got up and down perhaps even a bit more than Taylor did.
Taylor had to, I mean, I think he just had Hazard to deal with. Taylor, certainly first half, had Mertens, Alder, Weireld was pushing on as well. Yeah. And I said this on the message board, I thought his position and his judgment was first class. Yeah. He just made the right choice every single time, whether to stick with the guy with the ball or to track the runner, to go wide, to get tight. He just picked every time. And there was a chap two down from me who was with his elderly father. And he just was talking about fullbacks all the time. He just sort of said, "See, this is the difference. You see, like back in your day, Dad, you know, da da da." And he was full of praise for Taylor. Absolutely. And he was just saying how he's the definitive, not the definitive, but you know, he's the definitive fullback, modern fullback play. And I think he's absolutely right.
If we we're not really singling out across that back five, but I'd pick him out as the one who really epitomised that we're just not going to get beaten. We're not going to lose. Two, especially in the last sort of 10 minutes, especially that last big tackle brought a massive cheer. And there was one quite early on the touchline as well. But perhaps my favourite was he's trying to usher the ball out for a goal kick with De Bruyne on his back, and De Bruyne eventually gives away the free kick, showing, you know, he's frustrated already on half an hour that he's not getting into the game. And if you compare that to his, I don't know if it was the Bosnia or Cyprus game, but he dived in and was very lucky not to get more seriously punished. And we talked a bit, I think, at the time about his judgment. Certainly some of the fans did on the message board. But, like you say, decision-making was great. The times he went to ground, they were to put big tackles in that really frustrated the Belgians, brought a massive cheer from the crowd. And he was just not going to let... he was not going to be second to any ball, but he had half a chance again.
Yeah, he was my sort of first among equals. But it's... It's slightly spurious to kind of single anybody out, I suppose. Yeah,
I'd be like mega unoriginal and say Gareth Bale was mine. The goal was fantastic, but it was round about maybe 70 minutes. His legs are completely gone. Stepped back into midfield and it was kind of like a 39-year-old Lippmanen. He was just standing there and the ball was going to him, just spraying it around. Really kind of, he kind of held the ball for us when we really needed it. And it kind of made me think as well, this guy will win like 150 caps or something. Cause he clearly has got that ability to just use the ball.
And he wants it as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, really exactly. And I thought, wow, this week I'm kind of seeing a decade into the future here of what could happen. And this is, you know, it's great.
I'm inclined to agree with you there about man of the match for Bale, just because, you know, the sheer quality, that was probably our only clear-cut opportunity, and he takes it. You know, and that's why he's an 80-odd million pound player, isn't it? Because he just, and like you said at the time, you know, that ball's in the air a long time, to watch it down, then control it, and then just in the back of the net.
Especially
and you've got
in the keeper,
Courtois,
the keeper,
is a quality keeper.
Going to come
he's huge as well.
Huge quality keeper, is bearing down on you, and just to keep you cool in that situation and be that clinical.
And he doesn't look at the goal at all, does he? He just kind of comes out. He's got to rotate as well and turn, and just sort of roll.
He's got the intelligence for it as well, because straight after the game he's interviewed on TV, and it was only when they play it back that you fully notice it. Courtois comes out.
Yeah.
And he says, in the corner, Mike, you see that he came out and stopped. And he thought, oh, this is on then. Because he didn't want him to keep coming, because then there's nothing he can do with it. And he realises, so all the way he's thinking, yeah, he's coming out. Oh, no, he's going back. Yeah, I can get a shot in here. And then not even a speculative, you know, just sort of swing your leg at it. Mm. Just to turn and place it through his legs.
Mm. I don't know if any other player on our team would have scored that goal.
That's what I mean.
I mean, you know, they might have done.
I think Ramsey could have done.
But I wouldn't back them nine times out of ten to do it.
But that's why he's world class. Yeah. And that's why, you know, that it's those moments that are making the difference for us.
But that's the thing,
isn't it? You know, Andorra free kick, that yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nainggolan shouldn't be heading that back.
No.
Although as soon as he did that, I thought, well, I can see why he's doing that. Mm. But he makes a bit of a hash of it. It could have gone. He's misdirected it. So he could have misdirected it in any number of places. Yeah. Or a number of directions. And it goes straight to, as you say, Rich, you know, the only person on our team that you'd back to do that.
He's looking at the line of players coming out. And the way he's sort of facing, he can see, I forget it was now, the last man slightly behind the others coming back from the previous ball. So there's no way that Bale's in his line of sight. So he almost deliberately sort of plays it a bit that way because he knows it's away from the players right in front of him running back out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right there.
But Ramsey, if you watch it back, Ramsey is available. So if he didn't fancy it, if he didn't back himself, which he could have just chested it back and laid it off for Ramsey. It was a bizarre sort of kind of, hang on, is that just... happened and they kind of glance over because,
and then of course,
I'm sure the lines was going to, you know, think, oh, that's been headed back in, he's going to disallow.
Loads of people in the pub were like, oh, well, no, he's going to disallow it. And the people, like, it was like this rumour mill started within seconds. No, it's been disallowed. And I literally jumped up, I was like running around like a kid, and I thought, well, no, clearly he's onside because the defenders played it back. And there were so many people, no, it's definitely been disallowed. And I'm waiting, looking at the screen, the 1-0 comes up. I'm thinking, right, okay, they don't know what they're on about.
Mm.
But even then, I was doubting it, because when it goes in, I thought it was clearly a goal.
Go on, Leon.
The ref was right there on the spot, wasn't he? I looked at the ref straight away, and he's pointing to the centre circle. So I knew straight away it was a goal anyway. But it's just, what was so mad about it for me was, that's the kind of goal that we usually give away, wasn't it? I kind of immediately thought of Gavin Maguire against Germany in 91, you know, that's the kind of thing we usually do. And has our look kind of finally turned to the point where the opposition is making mistakes and gifting us goals?
This Chris Coleman against Italy in Anfield.
Used to happen.
I think Gavin Maguire in 91 was everyone's first thought.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It is the sort of goal. And when I said that to the lad I go to the games with, I sort of said that's usually you see that us giving those away.
Mm.
And I thought Nangeland, I'm not saying it was because of that necessarily, but I thought the poise and the control that he was demonstrating until that point disappeared really quickly.
First 20 minutes or so, I thought he was the best player on the pitch. I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
And John Chapman had said that he's highly rated. He was man of the match in their game against France. And as soon as he started, you're thinking, blimey, no, it looks like the hype and the, you know, the quality and that he's justified. But I thought he, I wouldn't say he disappeared, that would be harsh, but I don't think he exerted anywhere near the influence, certainly in the remainder of that first half. And then in the second half, I don't think he was...
But even early on, the way we set up and were snuffing things out when they regularly had to come in narrow because they couldn't seem to get any decent balls in, he was having to recycle the ball backwards and then he was going further and further back a lot of the time. So he looks really comfortable. He's picking up the ball in space regularly. But when he plays it through to the more attacking players, then they couldn't really do anything with it. And it was coming back to him. And he wasn't able at any point to find a really sort of killer pass into a channel where they'd have a chance. He comes a bit wider to put in one really good ball, doesn't he, into the sort of 6-yard box in the second half. But he must have been incredibly frustrated with the Hazard and De Bruyne and some of those other players not being able to move the ball as quickly in the 18-yard box.
Yeah, it was really evident that we'd had that 2 weeks as a squad to kind of really specifically plan right down to the finest detail what we were going to do, and they clearly implemented it all to perfection.
The shape was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, at no point did you think, oh, hang on, we're open here.
Yeah, someone's going to give.
They're going to cut through us here. Second half, I thought we were totally in control. By that sort of early flurry, I thought we were totally in control of the game.
Of their 21 efforts, 12 were blocked. You know, were blocked by Welsh players. But it never felt like that sort of desperate, hanging on for your life sort of block. It was always this doubling up. And we talked about Gunter earlier. It's about about an hour. And Williams and then Ledley block a couple of shots in quick succession. But it never looked like, oh, it's going to fall to their guy and he's just going to put it in because he's on his own in the penalty box. Gunter was always there right behind him or Chester was coming across. We were always paired up and always...
The work rate is phenomenal with this team. And the engine on all the players.
Yeah.
When was the first substitution? Bale with 86 minutes, 87 minutes gone? I can see why Coleman didn't want to disturb it. So they're out on their feet, but they were still all giving it 110%.
It's the Gareth Bale thing as well, isn't it? You know, even if he's out on his feet, he's still Gareth Bale, and the Belgians aren't.
Someone's going to have to cover him, aren't they?
Yeah. Did you see when he came off, actually, when he was saying to Sam Vokes, he was just sort of screaming at him, work, 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 when he came off. It's great to see.
Another sign of the sort of discipline in the way we defend is the free kicks as well. They gave away more free kicks than we did, despite the fact they had 2/3 of the possession. And actually, it's only kind of late on we started to give away a few more fouls, but they were kind of clever ones, weren't they, in kind of clever positions. All right.
Well, the one of Whipsell was never a foul.
Yeah, and arguably not all fouls. Alan was possibly lucky to get away with that second one, but Carnham gave one away, a really clever one, as the pressure was building again. Just knock him over there and just slow them down and frustrate them a bit more. And then they started giving away the fouls because they were frustrated. I think Witzel fouled someone in the middle, and same with those kind of headers from Williams and Richards in the second half. They put their bodies on the line. The Belgians are frustrated. They're swinging legs and giving away free kicks, and then we can slow it down again. Free kick in our box.
Last 20 minutes, they're putting these sort of angled crosses into the box, these sort of hopeful punts, and a few shots from distance. Of course, Sky then goes in, does a close-up of them, and they're all pulling faces and looking at the. They're looking at the bench. They're all, because you know, this campaign, certainly the World Cup qualifying campaign where they walked the group, they haven't been under any pressure qualifying in several years. It's, none of these players are used to this kind of the atmos. The weather was pretty dreadful by the time it started hammering down, and the look on their face was like, Christ, it's one of these games. And they were thinking, right, okay, we've got 4 games after this, we'll just have to put it right against other teams. There was this look on their faces, and they were putting in, the defenders were just humping balls forward, but they all kept looking at the touchline.
It's quite interesting when Benteke was, when he thought he'd been substituted.
Yeah.
He was off like a shot, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There was no sort of like, I want to stay on and try and sort this out.
Yeah, there's no
bleeding. He bolted, didn't he? And he was like, he had to sort of convince him, oh, it's not you, go back on.
He was dreadful.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely dreadful. He's difficult. I mean, he's a big fella.
Yeah.
And, you know, the defenders knew they were, you know, playing against him kind of thing. But I thought he was absolutely
Benteke, he's a highly competent EPL striker. We shouldn't be like Ashley Williams shouldn't be afraid of
the very definition of Benteke. Damning with faint praise.
Well, yeah.
Highly competent.
He's a highly competent EPL level striker.
I hear that at work an awful lot.
Well, yeah, Tim Shield,
I know what that means.
Yeah, Tim Shield was talking about, if he stays with Villa, does well in the Euros, we'll get him a move to Real Madrid. No. Yeah. Benteke will
isn't he? He's a Villa player.
Yeah, he is. He's a really good player in an average team.
That says more about Tim Sherwood than Christian Benteke, to be honest. But I take your point. I thought
it was interesting how kind of early, well, at half time, they thought, we're going to have to do something different. And Lukaku comes on as well. Now, as far as I know, they very rarely, if ever, stick Lukaku and Benteke up on together. They went 4-4-2. Well, now they're just going to sort of cross after cross after cross.
They were going to get us with two highly competent EPL strikers.
But Lukaku can't run. I mean, I don't know what you thought.
I thought he was dreadful.
Absolutely dreadful. John Chapman had some very, very complimentary tweets during the game as he was covering it. Not a huge number, and they're up on the blog. Actually, I collated them all, and he was as surprised as anybody that, and you know, this is a guy that, you know, follows and writes about the team, to see the two of them. So you didn't get a sense, though, that it was something that perhaps they'd been, you know, working on, developing. It was which one shall I take off to put him on and see how we go? But having said that, it's not as if they didn't have options on the bench, and I'm looking at it. You know,
the bench is incredible. They had
Morales up front, they had, you know, Origi. So, I mean, there were different options. They could have brought, you know, Dembele on and playing behind the striker, but tried it. No, I mean, as you say, he was barely any better than Benteke.
But just to kind of like, just a little bit challenge the idea of how good Belgium are. I mean, Origi was voted in the France top division's worst 11 for the season. Jose Mourinho made zero attempt to keep Lukaku. I just think these are good, competent players. I just don't think that
those three
would all get in our team, but I'm just saying they're not great. They're not brilliant.
Do you think that's about like Dembele? So he's this almost man, isn't he? He's like, he's almost good, you know?
But see, that's my thing. For me, I think that the hype that Belgium get, particularly in this country, is born as much out of familiarity with these players as it is about anything that they've actually achieved. And John Chapman himself said, when I spoke to him, that, okay, they're second in the world, but Belgium haven't beaten, I don't know if he said many or any, top sides.
Mm.
So they've done it beating their peers, I suppose, and obviously, you know, not losing many games, obviously. But when they've had tough challenges, and, you know, maybe, you know, France, you know, the game before us would constitute as a top team. But when they've had those games, they've struggled and they've not been able to get a result. And you know, the Argentina quarterfinal was most obvious example.
The kind of hubris which I associate with this Belgian team for me is when Lukaku changed his agent a few months ago. And his agent, first thing he did was came out in the press and said, if I'd been his agent a few months back, there's no way he would have signed for Everton because he's far too good for that. He's worthy of a club of the stature of Bayern Munich or Barcelona. And I was just thinking, what has Lukaku done so far in his career to really justify his agent coming out and talking in the press about how this player should be at Barcelona? I mean,
sounds like a good agent,
mate. Is it the same agent? Is it the same agent who worked for Nyatanga those years back when he was talking of moving to Barcelona?
the whole Belgium thing actually is based as much around their mediocrity over the previous 20 years. If this was a Dutch team or a German team or an Italian team like this, it would be like, well, that's what they always bring to the party. They always have lots of good players at big clubs playing Champions League football. It's just a relative novelty to see Belgium sort of back up, you know, at the heavyweight end. Because, I mean, they were one of the top teams in the 80s when I was a kid. So, and once again, those lads from Belgium that I was talking to before, they would agree and they said, well, yeah, because we were pretty poor in the 90s and the noughties. So suddenly we've looked good by comparison to that. Mm-hmm. World Cup, fairly similar. The only quality performance they put in was probably the one against the USA.
I was probably one of the most cautious about all the talk of them being overrated and not really a team and whatever else. It seemed to me before, they always score, they always do what they need to do, but evidently that's not true. You know, I was certainly wrong about that. They look short of ideas, completely short of ideas when it got tough for them. But I'm reluctant to do them down so much because Benteke, for all we've kind of run him down now, you don't score that many goals in the EPL without being a half decent striker. There's a lot to say about our game and our defence that he was nowhere. Mm. You know?
Nobody's mentioned Ashley Williams. I mean, I just think we've praised everyone else in the back.
I think that's a given.
It's a given.
He's an absolute titan.
Bob was out on his feet at the end, wasn't he? I mean, as a lot of them were, but I think just that, again, a little bit more obviously, was just exhausting.
What a captain as well. I think it was the right decision to take the captaincy off Ramsey after that, the Serbia hammering, and give it to Williams. I said that at the time, and I think it's sort of proven to be right, really, because he's a real leader. He's, you know, he's proven to be like up there with people like Yorath and Kevin Ratcliffe and Gary Speed, like one of the great Wales captains, I think, already.
I agree. No, I absolutely agree. And I think in a lot of countries, and Bale or the Bale figure would get it almost by default.
Yeah.
And John Chapman made a point, and albeit he's getting it in company's absence, but Hazard was given the captaincy against France and retained it for the game against us. And John Chapman felt it was because Wilmots wanted to give him more responsibility. And you kind of think, well, you know, this is, you know, a player who's moved for like 30 million quid or whatever it was to Chelsea. You know, he's player of the year in England. How much more responsibility does he have to have thrust upon him? You don't sense that Gareth Bale needs any responsibility given to him. He basically has taken it already, isn't he? And I just thought, Hazard was quite a poor captain. Mm. I didn't really see him supporting, cajoling, bollocking. However you want your captain to do, he wasn't yelling.
Well, it doesn't do either. He doesn't seem to lead.
No, exactly. I know this.
He doesn't seem to.
Exactly.
And there's other ways of being a captain. Yeah. I appreciate, you know, Ashley Williams doesn't spend all game sort of ranting and raving, but he was talking to players, you know, and I just thought they were poles apart in terms of that. Mm. What you want to see at the very least out of a captain. I'm sure all the Belgian players would be, you know, polite and courteous about him as a captain, Hazard, but I thought Ashley Williams was a colossus. And I agree with you, Leon. I think I'd have taken the captaincy off Ramsey far earlier, actually. I was never a big fan of him getting in the first place. I think longer term, he will be our captain, but I think it was right to have it taken off him in the circumstances. I don't think there were too many alternatives, frankly. But I think Williams has been pitch perfect ever
since.
He's
a big character as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
You know, he's a real leader. I think. I would say within that side there aren't too many other big characters. You know, or leaders in the sense of they'll talk to everybody all the time.
But I sense there's some emerging.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's byproduct, if you like, of the momentum and the spirit. The momentum we have on the pitch and the spirit that's clearly in place off the pitch. But I think there are some of those sort of players and those characters beginning to emerge.
With Bale and Ramsey and what they offer skill-wise, I think it's better that those players don't have the captaincy. And you give it to a guy who's a character, who's emerged as a leader, and plays in the spine of the team, and is a grafter. Because I think that's the quality that the captain needs. You can lead by example. And you look at Hazard, he's on the flank and he's a flair player. He's an awful choice of a captain. He's probably the least suited in the team for that kind of role. Ashley Williams, you'd think he'd always been the captain. You'd think it'd always been his responsibility. Mm. And he's a Swansea captain as well. And
he comes easily to him, doesn't he? He seems natural to it, doesn't he?
Those kind of players like Ramsey and Hazard, games come along where they'll go missing. Even someone as good as Ramsey will have games where he just can't get into it, where he's maybe not on top form. And you can't have your captain like that. Williams never goes missing. Williams is always there. He's in that crucial position. We talked about him being dead on his feet at the end, but was right. But he's still able to win that kind of crucial header off Benteke with about 2 minutes to go. He's just massive. He's not going to stop until it's done.
Yeah.
Just to change the subject maybe for a minute, I think probably time we all gave Coleman a little bit more praise as well, because he's really proving to be a top manager. And just remembering back to the first podcast, which I think it was me, Rich and Russ did, and we were talking about whether we were confident we could actually qualify or not. And I think we also came to the conclusion that we'd be confident if we had another manager in charge, but we weren't really sure how it was going to go under Coleman. And just what an amazing transformation it's been this campaign compared to the last one. In him, like just his persona, he's so sort of bullish, which I really like. He's positive. He seems tactically astute now. He's changing things, but there seems to be a reason for him changing things all the time. It's not just like desperation. I'm just so impressed with Coleman this campaign.
I think he's got a fantastic team there as well, hasn't he? He seems to get the best out of that team.
Well, yeah, I think in terms of like the tactics and stuff, like Oshan Roberts, I think that's his kind of responsibility. And I don't know whether he would also take the responsibility of substitutions and that kind of thing. But I think I agree in terms of Coleman's attitude previously. And I'm sure in the future there's bound to be some kind of more Coleman moments in like interviews and stuff. But he was all over the place. But you're right, the kind of the whole bullish thing is fantastic. And I think he's kind of bought into the idea that this is a really good team. What I need to do is kind of be kind of the voice and kind of the leader figure. I mean, I would say, and it seems kind of churlish to kind of try and do down Coleman, but I think he's in his job that he's going to do well in. I mean, I think if you put him in charge of a club team, I see the same outcome as all of his other jobs. But I'm going to say he's doing a fantastic job and we will qualify and he'll have played a big part of that.
That is as good as he's going to get operation.
I've said it.
He needs to take that.
He was good at Fulham. He did a good job at Fulham, didn't he?
Yeah.
Initially. Well, he inherited a good team and then it kind of... Or,
well, I don't know, because he inherited them from Tigana, didn't he? And Tigana never did anything with them. And he got rid of him in the end, didn't he? And then he sort of went wrong then.
He bought Simon Davis in, he bought Jimmy Bullard, he bought some good players in who did well for Fulham after he left as well. So he wasn't like a complete failure there, and it wasn't like he just completely took over Tigana's squad. I think he did add something to Fulham as well. A lot of that team that got to the Europa League final under Hodgson was Coleman's team, really.
I wouldn't try and rewrite his pretty poor track record at club level. There might be those kind of excuses for him, but whatever. You don't get to where we are. You can have three Gareth Bales and a couple of Austin Roberts if you like, but you don't get to where we are without the guy in charge doing the right things and knowing what he's doing.
I don't know, but I agree with you, and I think he is contributing well. I kind of see it as a kind of a George Bush, Dick Cheney kind of relationship with Oshan Roberts. Chris Coleman is like the folksy guy who everyone can, he's such a cool guy. He's kind of saying all the right things and we're going to go for it. And then he's got the people behind him saying, okay, well, this is how we'll work on the defence.
I'm not sure that's enough on its own. You can't.
No,
those,
exactly.
People like Bale and Ramsey, if on the training pitch, all they're getting from him is a few kind of G-up sort of comments.
But it'll be Osh and Roberts and the team doing it. I don't know.
I mean, you wouldn't need it. You wouldn't really need a head coach then, that thing, would you?
Does that make Bale
manager,
gone on Rumsfeld?
Well, I guess we'll see in the future what happens once he's led us to the winning the Euros and stuff. And well, good luck, Real Madrid, when that happens. But he is doing a fantastic job, and I'm really happy that he's doing well, because like he clearly did kind of go through some kind of trauma when he took over the job, and perhaps that was why we did so badly to start with. But now it is working, and that's great.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've got to be fair, and you know when we've criticised in the past, I think it's merited that, whether it's a result or performance, or as you say, you know, it's something a bit calamitous on his part, like his passport and all the rest of it. But at the same time, credit where it's due. I don't think you could have a greatest team in place, and you know, Osh and Roberts can be writing great reports about the opposition and drawing up all these different sort of tactical approaches, but ultimately it's Coleman that does send them out. And presumably sets the agenda and designs that whole sort of 2 weeks in advance, and the buck also sort of stops with him.
He
as
said,
well,
didn't
so.
He? I don't know if it was after the game I was reading it, but he said that he, you know, tried to play when they came in. They tried to go down the Gary Speed route and continue that style of football, and it just didn't work. And he just sort of had to sort of go back to the drawing board and say, look, I want us to play in this kind of way, but we're going to have to be more solid if we're going to do it.
I think it was certain things off the pitch as well that he kept in place.
Yeah.
Having said all that, Kit Simons has left, and it might well be that actually Kit Simons was the brains behind it all.
Yeah.
Not Coleman, not Roberts, not anybody else, but Kit Simons, and just watch it all unravel.
we talked at length in the last podcast that there are so many pieces to it. That article we kind of talked about for quite a while last time, it's a whole picture of a setup of a staff of Coleman, of the players, of the hotel, even the way we travel, the way we do everything. That I don't think there's any one thing, bar maybe a few crucial people, we could lose where it would all completely collapse.
Yeah.
I think that reflects well on Coleman as well, that he's put this team in place and he's given people like Osh and Roberts the responsibility, which he's obviously doing a great job, but you know, rather than George Bush, I think he sort of reminds me a bit more of like Richard Branson, say, in charge of Virgin. You know, he's not like the greatest sort of business brain himself, but he knows how to put people in place that kind of can do the job for him, you know, that sort of thing. And that's kind of how I see Coleman, maybe more as a Richard Branson type figure.
Well, yeah, good managers are able to delegate, because I think Alex Ferguson wasn't really a coach. He appointed really good coaches.
Yeah.
And
he had Kiros, didn't he? He had McLaren. Well, what Ferguson used to do is he wanted to keep everything fresh, didn't he? There was, I'm reading an article about him, and it said once he saw his coach doing the same drill twice, he knew he had to change his coach.
Mm.
And he just kept everything fresh for the players every day, so... and he constantly changed, didn't he? His number two and first team coach and all that sort of stuff to keep it fresh for him. So,
but there was a lot of reference in that Chris Wathen article about how Coleman appeared to delegate quite a lot of things, and I think you know, to his credit. I mean, I'll edit all this out obviously later, and I'll make it sound like Rich, you're still sticking
the. I mean, notice that today one of the recent apostle threads was encouraging people to get tattoos of the negative postings and tweets they've made about Coleman in the event we should qualify.
Well, I was always prepared to give him this campaign. I mean, the last campaign, I mean, you know, by his own admission, it didn't go well. And I felt that had there been some truth, and I think there was, that there was still a bit of a shadow cast over the squad because of, you know, the circumstances in which he took the job on. I think in some respects, some of those young members of that team, you know, were probably still coming to terms with different things. You had all of the transition as well. And I think, you know, you had injuries as well. And I think he didn't have a full campaign in that respect. He had a full campaign, but I think there was still some issues. Once he'd sort of said, actually, no, I'm going to make these changes, you then had some bad results, admittedly. But I was always prepared to give him this campaign, and so far, so good. I mean, one defeat in 2 years, isn't it? I mean, which goes back into that last campaign. Mm. So, okay, maybe revisionism to a certain extent on how that campaign panned out and how it ended up going. But in one defeat in 2 years.
I think we all started getting nervous again after the Andorra game, didn't we? Because although it was a win, it was poor. And that could have been a sign that things were still a real on the verge of collapse. But it's since then that it's really taken off.
But I've said this before, we start every season slowly. Our first fixture in every season for, 10 years or more, we are usually very poor. Which is perhaps a bit of a concern going away to Cyprus. But I can imagine they'll probably get another week. I don't know, probably it won't be any more than that, will it, this time? Start the season as well. You back him. We feel much more confident, don't we? Or do we not? That the tone and the preparation will be pitched just right. They will travel over there in the right time. Mm. They will acclimatise in the right sort of pace. And, Dan and I met up last night, we were talking about it. That Cyprus side isn't as good as Bosnia. It's not as good as Israel. Yeah. It's not as good as Belgium. And we've got decent results against all of those.
I think the squad will be going over there thinking we'll play to the tactics that have been set out and we'll win this game. And it'll be normal for that to happen for us. Mm-hmm. I think they're kind of in that mentality now, which is brilliant. And they should be as well because they've got the ability to match that confidence.
And we've never had a September like this September before. You can understand we've had Septembers at the start of campaigns where we're kind of nervous and we don't know how it's going to pan out. We've had the Septembers in the middle of a campaign where most of the time we're already out of it or desperately chasing a few results. We've never gone into a September like this before where we've got every reason to be confident. Players turn up.
That's a fair point.
We've had absolute nightmare performances the last two times we've been to Cyprus. I know this is a different team, but there is just this part of me that thinks we always just seem to be awful when we go there. And we've got go there with our head screwed on right this time or we'll get turned over again.
I kind of feel like we're beyond that now. I mean, I would say we could play really badly and snatch a draw and that would be, that's where we're at now, I think. A really awful court called performance against a poor team. We'll just about get that draw. I truly believe we're kind of, the mentality of the players and the squad and the management is we're at that better level now.
My only concern now is an injury crisis. I don't think we're going to get those kind of suspicious pullouts now. No way, is there? But if with Alan or Eddie out, if we were to lose three key players, we're not tested in that respect. Okay, Bosnia and Cyprus, we were out Ramsey and Alan, and we had to put a bit of a scratch midfield together. But maybe a couple of those defenders, maybe Bale, say. You don't know them. That's a test that's ahead somewhere, isn't it? How we cope with a real depleted team and without Bale. That game's coming sooner or later, isn't it? The game without Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
So we've got to be careful of those sort of things. But you know, there's every reason to think we can go and win both games in that double header and be there.
Well, I mean, you say that, but I mean, Messi earned his 100th cap, didn't he? The other day, you know, Ronaldo's got them.
Sergio Ramos has got 128 caps.
Yeah, those talismanic players clearly don't miss that many games have got that sort of total. I mean, partly that's down to the number of fixtures they play. It's about fitness and things like that. But it just seems to be that he will turn up. You know, he's not. We haven't had any friendlies this season, admittedly, so possibly might have been excused one or two of those had we played any.
I think he might have been excused, but I don't think he would have taken up that offer to be excused.
I like to think that would be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
not suggesting that he would ever start casually or frivolously missing games, but any player can be ruled out for 6 months, can't they? Any player can get a bad injury, even Gareth Bale. that's a horrible, pessimistic line of thinking to be going down on this particular podcast, but it's just one sort of possible future concern, hopefully.
Well, we'll have Harry Wilson.
Will never come to pass.
We'll have Harry Wilson by then, so it won't be a problem.
Before we kind of speculate about how the next fixtures are going to go, and I think inevitably start totting up how many more points we actually need, quick word for Hal Robson-Kanu.
Oh, what a man.
What a man.
Boss.
Yeah.
Won that free kick.
He had very little left in the tank. And as he got substituted, I've just double checked, and the BBC website lists it as in the 93rd minute.
Yeah.
And as he was trooping off, the referee kind of went over to him, and you're kind of thinking, the referee saying, listen, you need to leave the pitch, you need to kind of get going. But then kind of exchanged a few words and then just walked away. And I just sensed, I kind of like to think that the referee went over and sort of said, seriously, you need to, you need to run off, and then thought, actually, I appreciate that. Actually, you can't do that. Yeah. That's beyond you now. Yeah. And just kind of let him just carry on at the pace he'd already kind of was going off at. And I thought he was excellent. I really did. Yeah. And he just meant so much to him at the end.
Yeah. What on earth will happen when we're at the Euros? And let's say Hal scores 4 goals. He'll be that guy, the breakout striker of the tournament. Yeah. Where on earth could he be? after the Euros, yeah. This is kind of mind-boggling, but it's really cool though, I think, and I really hope it works out.
Are you saying he's going to be like the Poborski of the
Carol Poborski and Jordi Cruyff,
Toto Schillaci.
Yeah.
It's strange for a player who's playing at a relatively low level. Do you think he'd struggle more in these games against bigger teams like Belgium? But it almost seems like that kind of game is more for him than like the Israel game.
He did really well when Reading were in the Premier League. He scored 7 goals, which is a lot more than he scored in the Championship last season. I don't know how many he got exactly, but he did really well at that higher level. I don't know, maybe strangely he's kind of suited to playing against the better teams.
There was a very good blog written about him, about why he's so much better for Wales than he is for Reading.
Was that The Guardian?
No, it was like a fan site to do with Reading FC. And it was talking about how tactically the different coaches that Reading have had recently have set the team up. And it's about how they want the midfield to play, and it leaves him too isolated. And it kind of conceded that, well, the simple answer is that he's surrounded by better players. Obviously Ramsey, Allen, Bale and the like. But it was about tactically, and it was just really interesting. They're a bit just sort of lukewarm about him. And I think if he was to get a move to a Premiership club, they'd probably go, yeah, fine, we'll take the money. I don't think they would be necessarily sorry to see him go.
If you're a team playing and you want to have the ball and you want to be attacking, like we were out in Israel, he doesn't offer you quite so much, actually. If you want him to get in there and score goals, he's going to have a poor first touch a few times. He's going to fluff a couple of chances. He fluffed one against Belgium.
Yeah.
But when you've not got the ball, when you want that kind of willing runner, dragging the play out wide a bit, or he can kind of hold the ball up with a real low centre of gravity, he was good in both the Belgian games. And
big old unit.
Absolutely. And that,
presence.
You know, long term, especially if we want to score goals, you know, Vokes is probably the option. But Vokes wouldn't have won that free kick out wide, because that was 50-50, really. And it was just the fact that he dragged that ball around and he'd done that little bit of skill. Mm-hmm. That's what got us the free kick, because otherwise it's just a 50-50 thing, wasn't it?
Robson Carlo's best performance so far was the last Cyprus game, where he was superb. Scores what turned out to be the winning goal, and that game, I think he was possibly right at the end. Yeah. He was dead on his feet in that one. Just do the same again, isn't it? It's I take the point on Israel, but to be honest, who would have thought we would have been so comfortable against Israel? I mean, we were all, you know, we've done the podcast, we were all there in the pub watching it, thinking, well, we don't, you know, we're going to, I said, there's going to be a 20-minute backs to the wall job. There was nothing. We won the game in second gear. They offered absolutely nothing. So he had a quiet game, didn't have much to do, probably because in a way he didn't find himself playing in the game that he anticipated that he was going to play.
Yeah.
So with him, his work, what, keep coming back to it, but the work rate of all the players, so even the ones who aren't as good as Ramsey and Bale, they're making up for it by just absolute sheer guts and determination. And they know we don't have a strong bench, so they know they can't put in a 65-minuter and just hand it over to someone else, which Belgium can do. They're gonna have, they go onto the pitch expecting to have to see the whole game out themselves. Okay, Reading's Reading, Wales is Wales. What can you really aim for when you're playing for Reading? Try and get back to the Premier League. There's a massive goal here, and I can't imagine any player not wanting to be there, even if they got a niggle, they're going to turn up. The finish line's in sight.
But you could see how much it meant to him, and he's, you know, we've said this before, I mean, it really means, you can see it does mean a lot to him and to play for us. And I thought he deserved all the plaudits he got. I think in a away fixture, I think I'm more inclined, all things being equal, and he needs to have more games, but I'd probably go more with Vokes, because I think the ball doesn't stick with Robson Carlo. It's great if he's running in the channels and he's got that work rate. And it's one thing having to do that if you know that there's other players coming, but very often you've got to do it and you're going to be on your own. And I thought he did that really, really well against Belgium. But it's nice to have the options, and he was injured for so long, Vokes, but it's nice to have him back. But then he came on and he was winning headers and the ball was sticking with him, and he only had about 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, be a big season for him next year. I mean, in some ways, perhaps good that Burnley have gone down. You know, if he can just be playing week in, week out in the Championship and score a few goals, you know, if he's got one season to hopefully get ready for our tournament, then maybe he's better off there than struggling along to a couple of goals here and there.
They'll do all right as well in the Championship, Burnley. That is almost like top end of the Championship is their level, because you know they've been up and down a couple of times.
Yeah, but it's what's Vokes' level, because he didn't really get a chance in the Premier League, did he? I think that's the sad thing from our point of view. But I think if he gets, you know, he needs games, he could possibly, if he's in amongst the goals, and he scored a few last time in the Championship, maybe a move in January. But he will know that this season's a big one for him, as all those players do. We mentioned this last time, the number of players referring to their next career moves, their next clubs, in a manner that suggests that the implications for not being or being in that squad is uppermost in their mind.
Leatherman is so desperately in that squad, he's prepared to go and sign for Blackpool, isn't he? I think I saw this week. So
he's gone there, is he?
That shows. I think that's what I saw on the BBC website.
Premiership, if it's only really now Bosnia away, where you need Premiership quality, Cyprus, Israel, Andorra, they're not Premiership quality. It could be done and dusted.
Yeah, I agree, but this is kind of relates a little bit to what you said earlier, Gareth, in terms of kind of how we were kind of drawing those kind of really clever fouls, taking our time. I think that's the kind of thing you get from playing in the EPL, is the kind of the match management, the match intelligence of Championship players don't have that.
No.
If you watch Championship games, you see they haven't got that kind of level of tactical awareness whilst they're playing. So yeah, I agree with you completely there in terms of the quality is going to be required for Bosnia, but by having it against Israel, you can just manage the game and make it comfortable, which is like exactly how it was out in Israel, I think.
Also, I think European experience has been quite key for our players for this campaign. So many more of them now have played with Swansea getting into the Europa League. You know, Joe Allen, Liverpool, has played in Europa League and Champions League. Bale, obviously, Ramsey. James Chester's played a few games in Europa League, I think, for Hull. Collins has. There's a lot of that team now. First choice team, probably three quarters of them actually played in Europa League or Champions League. Like Ledley for Celtic had a few seasons in the Champions League. Yeah.
Ben Davis was Spurs, kind of UEFA Cup left back.
They could have learned how to do it again. You know, Ledley was involved in a Celtic win that was kind of similar to our win last Friday, really. It kind of ceded possession to the opposition and just kind of kept the discipline and held out. And that's been really important for our players, I think, the European club experience.
I think it's a really good point. I think there are probably quite a few now that haven't occurred to me, actually. There's quite a few of that squad that have that, had experience.
Well, same, you know, we now got Cardiff and Swansea at the top end of English football. Okay, Cardiff, you know, don't punch their weight in that respect. But, you know, Matthews is ex-Cardiff, Gunther's ex-Cardiff, Ledley's ex-Cardiff, Ramsey. Throughout the 1990s, okay, we had players at Man United and Liverpool. There was nothing within Welsh football to sustain anything because they were all, you know, at the basement of the league. The fact that Swansea in the Premier League, comfortably in the Premier League, is a platform we've never had before.
Well, they've got established academies,
Off the field, both clubs have got superb facilities.
Well, that's what I mean.
When I was a kid, we didn't have any facilities at all.
Six of that starting 11 were produced by Cardiff, Swansea, Wrexham. Dan says Ledley, Ramsey and Gunter at Cardiff, Richards and Allen at Swansea, Taylor at Wrexham. You had others on the bench as well, Matthews, Sean McDonald. I think Ward as well at Wrexham, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, he was. Before going to Liverpool. Any appearances for Wrexham though before he left?
No, well, okay, but I mean, he's still, you know, I think it's still a claim there.
Yeah.
But you heard it here first, Robson Kanu to be among the top goal scorers, that would be four goals at the next European Championship.
Well, you never know who we get in our group in the pool stage.
Belgium again. No fear.
Well, yeah, kind of reflecting on the game, Leon made the brilliant comparison to the Champions League. I kind of felt a little bit on reflection, like I was watching the first, is it the last 16, the round after the group, the pool stage in the tournament. And I thought potentially I could see that happening, and kind of, we didn't look. Belgium had more of the ball, but in no way, shape, or form were we out of our class or depth?
So the format, if we qualify, the format then, there'll be 24 teams in the European Championship. So it'll be similar to how the World Cup was prior to 1998.
And most third place teams go through.
Where, yeah, so unless you finish fourth or you happen to be Scotland and always finish third and don't go through, any half-decent team probably would look at and think, of course, in the World Cup, you know, you're going to get an Argentina or a Brazil as well. So I actually think it's sort of, in a weird way, reinvigorated the whole thing. All the papers have been writing now because Northern Ireland, Wales, Slovakia, Iceland, they haven't fallen away. These smaller countries who don't have a habit of qualifying for things, of real Austria as well, have sort of thought, this is genuinely on here. We actually have a real chance of qualifying. And it seems to have made the groups that on paper didn't look quite weak, it actually made a lot of them very competitive because everyone's up for it.
It's a really good campaign, isn't it? There's something going on in each group.
In every group. In every one, there's a team thinking, God, I haven't seen that team in a tournament for yonks, or if ever. By sort of opening it up a bit, it's given everyone a real shot at it. And it's made it a lot more competitive. And I can't see why that wouldn't happen then. When you've got the final 24 through, most teams are going to think, we have a real chance of getting through to the next round.
But that's the stick that's to hit countries like the ones you've mentioned, including us, is that, yeah, of course you qualify because there's so many teams. But if we qualify as group winners, well, it could only be, you know, it could be a competition of 12, let alone 24. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
We've qualified as group winners, exactly. And it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And I think that
Slovakia are winning.
Iceland is winning.
They're not sneaking through until, in slipstreams.
No, but the criticism has been, you know, these countries are only interested because the other countries know, or the established countries.
I think that's a very sort of English centric view of it, though.
I don't share that, but I agree.
Austria top of the group as well. They're just loving it. We're loving it in Wales, you know, in Iceland. I'm sure they're loving it, but you know, it's just. For the average English football journalist, it's just, qualifiers are boring, England will qualify easily, which they will. But you look outside that sort of London-centric, English-centric view of it, and across Europe, there's a lot of countries that have been really energised by this whole new format, which I think is brilliant.
And you tend to discover teams as well, don't you? At these big tournaments, teams we don't know a lot about, I don't think about Slovakia, really, or Iceland, or Austria. But these, it's not a coincidence that these teams are winning and beating more established teams. And they'll go to this tournament and you'll watch three games in a row of these teams playing. And by the end of it, you'll know five or six really good players. And they'll all rock up in the Premier League or top end of the Championship or in Spain that summer. And at least one or two of them will go, perhaps not someone as small as Iceland, maybe as, I don't know, will go into a period of qualifying for three tournaments in a row. You know, other countries have done this. Bulgaria used to do it.
The Euros have always had that slightly different dynamic. World Cups are just traditionally won by the big heavyweight. It's like heavyweight boxing. It's just the usual suspects. The Euros, you know, we've watched Holland win them, Greece, Denmark. I think before we were born, Czechoslovakia. They have always had this more sort of. I don't know what it is. It just seems more open.
Greece, 2004,
Denmark in 92. Denmark hadn't even qualified in 92. Mm. They got in because of the war in Yugoslavia. France's first trophy was a Euro, as was Spain's.
Mm.
Although we now associate them as heavyweights, they broke through in at the European level.
So, you know, there is a different dynamic. You're right, but I think there's almost a tweak to that different dynamic. With it being such a larger tournament and having that additional round, so it would be a last 16, wouldn't it? I suppose, yeah. The thing is, I'm now worried how we'd be doing a penalty shootout. I'm not even going to go there. Must we still say if we qualify? I mean, what's the parlance? What's the etiquette here? I'm really struggling with this.
For me, it's if until we do. Simple as that.
For me, well, we've qualified. I mean, this. It would. We have to. I mean, look. Based on the players we have, the results we've achieved, and the kind of the character and the feel, and also the other teams in the group, there isn't really a situation that could occur.
We're going to win our home games. That's going to take us to 20 points, and that's job done for me. I think, you know, we're there.
I'm more cautious. I just think until it's done, it isn't done.
Even if we lose in Cyprus, I don't think there's any need to worry. I think we'll come home and I think then we'll beat Israel at home. We'll have 17 points, 2 games to go. One of those games is Andorra.
Does anyone think Gareth Bale is in the slightest bit worried about qualifying? I mean,
yeah, yeah. He's, you know, he'll be in his head. He's, we're there, we're done.
Well, he shouldn't. Frankly, he shouldn't be.
No.
I've got a few here for you. Bosnia can get 20 if they beat us in Belgium, and Belgium could still get 20. So we'd need 20 to match Belgium. Then it's not a guarantee. Israel can still get 21. All right, they've got to beat us in Belgium, but. Never know. Injury crisis, isn't it? Bosnia and Belgium could draw. Bosnia win all their other games.
If I were really pessimistic, I'm still waiting for this sort of Bosnia surge. Because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking they've been pretty awful throughout the campaign. But I look at their remaining, not the Belgium game, but the other games, think they could conceivably win all three of those other games.
Worst case scenario, we're going to end up with 17 points. I think even if we end up with 70 points, there's a good chance we're still going to qualify.
I mean, if we can establish, or if I can establish, you may or may not agree, that until we get the points, we're not there. You know, having said all that, I think we'll qualify in the game against Israel. I think we'll beat Cyprus and Israel, but I'm not willing to say we've qualified until we actually have.
I think you're right, but I think the interesting thing is that the next round, when we're in Cyprus, in some respects, the more important game is Belgium-Bosnia. Because I think if Bosnia don't get anything out of that... I don't think a draw ordinarily, a draw in Brussels, we were happy with it, but in the circumstance of the squad, they need to win that.
And there's pressure on Belgium in that game.
And there's now pressure on Belgium, and I just think Belgium are going to have to up their game a little bit.
Belgium are going to have a lot to prove.
Proof,
and
yeah.
I imagine for a team ranked second in the world with that level of expectation, they will have been hurt. They're going to be aiming to absolutely ruin Bosnia.
You look at the personnel Belgium have got available, it's simple. You're the second best team in the world. If you don't win this game, you might not qualify. So I am expecting Belgium to just turn up and do a job on them, and that would help us. And because the only team that I can think could stop us is them. There's no way Cyprus or Israel can do it, not from what I've seen from those teams.
As another kind of interesting sort of other permutation, I don't think it's completely out of the question that Bosnia could win in Belgium, win all of their last four games, in fact, including against us, and Belgium don't qualify.
Well,
we qualify top and Bosnia qualify second.
It's feasible. I mean, I was worried when they sat the coach and then got someone else in, thinking, oh, are they going to have that bounce? Our results against Belgium have kind of actually made that irrelevant for us, because I think we're out of their reach. But if you're Belgium, yeah, you probably are a little bit worried. Because as pleased as we are at gaining 4 points against Belgium, they're looking at how many points they've dropped against us and thinking, well, that was never in the script, surely. So yeah, but I think that's going to be a really fascinating fixture.
If it's equal points, does it come down to head-to-head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be ahead of Belgium because we've taken the 4 points off them.
So yeah.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it is only nuclear Armageddon that can stop us. Is that the conclusion?
Well, no, the worry is that it could come down. It's unlikely, but it could mathematically come down to us and Bosnia. And if they do us in Bosnia, they got the better head-to-head. So our better points difference over Bosnia will count for nothing.
Well, then Belgium and us can fight it out for who's going to qualify top.
I'm curious, Leon. It's sort of pressing like Austria, sort of talking about us. Or for that matter, talking about the way the campaign is going in across all the groups with the sort of smaller... nations doing so well.
It's more just that Austria is doing so well that they're kind of obsessed with that, really. Austria top of the group, they beat Russia away on Sunday 1-0, and they're almost certainly qualified. They're in a slight, I think they've got 16 points, so they're in a better position than us, and they've never qualified for Euros before. They were host 2008, but they've never actually qualified for Euros before, so that's the whole thing with them, really. But it's been a little bit of talk about how it's kind of energised the smaller countries like Iceland and us as well. Because Austria are doing so well, Wales hasn't really sort of made such an impression at the moment. What's great about the format as well, and the games being spread out over the course of a week, is that I can go down to my local Irish pub on last Friday, and that's, you know, this is the main game on. Like, Wales, Belgium is the main game. It's not like, oh, sorry, can't put it on. There's people wanting to watch the England match or the Germany match or the Italy match or whatever, because those are on different days. So there was a couple of people, you know, I had some mates down who were English and German who were watching, but there was also a couple of other people in the bar who were just, you know, there Austrians, I presume, watching the game, just because that was the biggest game of the night. So fair play to UEFA for changing the format, I see.
Yeah, I wasn't persuaded by like Thursday games and Sunday games, but I think it
they're
has
spread over three nights, aren't they, each
like
time?
That, yeah. Okay, so it is pretty much sort of a case of passport, check, Union Jack boxer shorts, check, and novelty hats that hold two cans with two straws, check. What other things you take to tournaments, I don't know. I'm not
why would we know?
Well, I think we've talked long enough. I think the next time, I'm not sure when the next time will be for one of these, but I think it'll be beyond the first sort of birthday of having started this. So it's been an interesting year. I think we can take some credit for being unbeaten on the verge of qualification. But thank you, fellas. That's still kind of like, still don't kind of believe it. It's still a bit sort of weird, isn't it?
Russ, believe it. Yeah, it's happening. It's good. Embrace it.
Embrace it. Okay. Cheers, Leon. It's been grand that we've been able to keep you for the whole thing as well for once.
All right, yeah.
You coming over for the Israel game?
Yeah.
Ah, perfect.
I want to be there when we do it, when we qualify.
Don't jinx us, Leon.
Oh, no.
Well, maybe I should stay away.
I was mentioning it the other day about, because I'm going to pass my tournament ticket on, and I've bought two tickets in the Canton End, actually, for me and my eldest. So I'm going to take him to the game. I sort of mentioned it. You know, is it like a 5 o'clock kickoff as well? So it's kind of all right for him on a school night. And my wife said, I thought we were going to have, Griff, who's our youngest, I thought we were going to have his christening on his birthday. We haven't forgotten it's his birthday. No, of course not. Yeah, it is. It's the 6th. Yeah, no, don't be silly. It's a 5 o'clock. We'll be done by then.
Twenty minutes to go. These are special scenes at the Cardiff City Stadium. Wales leading Belgium. Stop the bells in their tracks. Just time seemed to stand still for a while then.